Respect Yourself by Joe Cocker. This is Mental Health Radio. Take it from us. And I know that our guest today has a great deal of focus on respect. She has worked in peer support training, in wellness recovery, in a whole sphere of positive mental health work. And I'm sure that respect is a crucial part of what she has been doing in her work. I'll introduce our guest in a little while. I'm Sheldon Brown, and we've got technician Declan Curran here. Take It From Us is funded by Framework Trust. Now, I got a Facebook message from our guest, who is a former radio guest here on Take It From Us, and mental health colleague Gloria White recently, which read, and I quote, "I am shifting into a position of getting some ideas and contacts to bring alive a mental health court, to bring alive a mental health court, just like the AOD court." And she said, "Love to hear your feedback." Well, my interest was immediately stimulated, and I thought, well, this is a subject for Take It From Us, a mental health court. But questions flashed through my mind spontaneously. What would it do? Why is it needed? And how would it work? Immediately, I went to the web and realised I'd seen some publicity about the need for a mental health court in New Zealand a while ago. North America, Canada, England and Australia have them, so why not New Zealand? So here's Gloria to talk about the need for a mental health court here. And I want to say that we replayed a very candid and honest and open interview about Gloria's life as a young girl and later as a teenager and her development into mental health work. That was in late January when I was away on holiday having my meltdown, and you can access that. It's a very wonderful story and so candid and honest. You can access that on www.takeitfromus.co.nz. So, Gloria, I hope you don't mind me promoting that, but that was one of the most outstanding interviews that I had the pleasure of participating in. So welcome again to Take It From Us.
Thank you, Sheldon. Good morning or good afternoon, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. And as Sheldon said, I have a place on my heart is to see the mental health court come to New Zealand or be woken up. And just as Sheldon says, there were some documents online in 2015 where lawyers and people got together to have a look at lightening up the judicial system of people who are travelling with journeys of mental illness on board. And really this came aboard for me was that two or three weeks ago, I was standing in the court with my son, and we were waiting to go in, and there was so much happening. He wasn't in a good space. He had a lot of voices happening for him, and I thought, wow, this is a place that really is not a place that he and I should be. And then I thought, a mental health court, you know, and I thought, well, you know, praise the Lord, that that came into being. And so I thought, well, they've got an AOD court. Why aren't we pushing for our whānau and families that are struggling through judicial systems to actually have a mental health court? So that's where I am at today. It's my heart and passion to do that.
So was that the first time that you had really given thought to a mental health court? Had you seen anything about the mental health court? Because it does seem there was a bit of a groundswell in 2015. There were a number of sort of academic papers, I think, written about the mental health court, and there did seem to be a heightened interest then. Did you see some of that work and publicity at that time, or was it just the fact that you were with your son in court?
It was actually just because I was in court with my son. I'd never ever, ever knew that there would be an MHC until that thought just dropped in. And I thought, oh, okay, I'll listen to that thought. And so I thought, well, I'm going to run with it. When I go home, I'm going to put mental health court and see if anyone's doing that. And that's where I came across those 2015 to 2016 papers, and then looked outside outside of New Zealand. And so, you know, right across America and many other states, those courts are functioning.
Right.
And it's lightening the judicial system that we have here in New Zealand. Yeah.
So, I mean, other than your son, have you had friends or whānau that have been impacted by the justice system and supposedly not treated well by the justice system, and particularly people that have mental health experience?
No, because my son is the only one for me in my space and place that has come up for me. Around where I'm sitting today, but I'm picking that as I go on, I'll probably find a lot more whānau coming up into the space that where my son is.
Yeah, because one of the revelations to me in doing a bit of research about this interview was that people are sort of recycled through the justice system.
Right.
They a very high proportion of people in prison have mental health diagnoses, and I think I actually extracted some statistics on that. Have you got those in front of you, or do you want me to...
You can do that.
Yeah, well, it says here a 2016 report by the New Zealand Department of Corrections recorded that 91% of prisoners suffer from a lifetime diagnosis. And I'm a bit confused about this lifetime diagnosis, because they describe it as, quote, any mental disorder. With 62% having received such a diagnosis. Diagnosis within the past 12 months. So here they are, I guess, being somewhat shocked and surprised at receiving a diagnosis, and they end up in prison. So in contrast with these two statistics of 91% of prisoners or 62% that have just received a diagnosis, statistics for the community recorded only 40% of people as suffering from a lifetime diagnosis of any mental disorder, with only 21% having received such a diagnosis within the past month. So what do those statistics say to you, Gloria?
That's 1% too many for me, and that something really needs to be done, you know, because people are slipping through the cracks and into the cracks, and the services, I don't believe there are enough services out there to meet what's happening, and I believe the demand for people going through mental health is going to get bigger and bigger, you know.
So what it says is that the main problem with the way in which our criminal justice system deals with mentally ill offenders is that it does not adequately provide for their diversion to mental health services. As a result, the majority of mentally ill offenders prosecuted through the courts do not receive treatment for their mental health issues. Now, that's a huge statement, isn't it? Because what do you have any insight at all into what happens when a mentally ill person goes into prison? I mean, how do they get treatment? Do they just take their pills in and voluntarily take them, or
and this is only coming off reading from the internet around when people who are suffering from mental illness are going in, the systems that look after them sometimes don't give them their medications, or they don't get to see people, you know, or the services go in when somebody's been brought into the police station there. But they really, from where I see it, that we actually need to have people sitting in the police stations when people come in, so that they're there as soon as they get in, they're not be called in. And I believe that peer support specialists and a trainer as peer support specialists needs to sit on some of those seats in there, because I have the deepest experience of what it feels like and what it looks like, and it's frightening.
Well, I guess the picture that I have at the moment is that the police are the front line in mental health. Nobody else goes and checks out a disturbance or an incident where a person with mental health experience is in trouble or in crisis. And then that person tends to be wheeled into a police station and held in the police station until somebody from an acute psychiatric unit turns up. And then if they deem that person to be unwell enough, they end up in an acute psychiatric unit.
That's right, yeah.
Well, I mean, that would be just about as frightening as being wheeled into a prison, I would have thought. And I mean, what impact of ending up in prison does that have on your mental health?
Well, I can give you a little story, and it's going back quite a little while. My son was taken into custody over in Manukau, and then I was rung up and said that he was in police custody. So I rang his mental health team and I said, "I'm coming in with you to the police station. I'm coming in." So I met them at the police station, and it was actually quite a distraught place to be, you know, walking in and have it. I forgot the central area where they popped us, but I could see him through the window, and it was like they were watching a caged animal, and it was just the conversations, that the negative conversations that were happening. You know, no one realised that I was the mother to the boy that they were calling a monkey and all sorts of things, you know, and I thought, wow. These are not the places for people like my son to be in, especially when the understanding is not, as you say, in that frontline place.
So, I mean, what insights did your son give you once the situation had settled down and you were able to talk to him?
Well, he actually found that acting like a monkey, because that's how they spoke to him, was a place that he should be, just to, I suppose, just to make whatever they were thinking come true for them.
Right.
And that's not a good place to push someone that's travelling through that unwellness and that. And what he found with him was that he gets isolated. And the very thing that that mental health say is we shouldn't be isolated, is that he gets isolated. He gets isolated at the hospital. He gets isolated in the prison, you know, being contained at the cells and that. And I'm just thinking, wow. You know, they tell us that our wellness comes through stepping out of that door, out of that room, and being social with other people around. So I can't quite figure out how that strand in the mental health says that, you know, we shouldn't be isolated.
Well, I mean, while we have seclusion in the psychiatric or mental health sector, there are a lot of parallels between acute mental health treatment and prison.
Yeah.
Because those seclusion rooms are, you know, they're very like a prison cell. And, you know, there is a strong movement in this country to eliminate seclusion, I think, by 2020. And I think it's one of the government organisations is leading the charge on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is such a similarity between acute services and prison. I mean, do you think there have been any advances, Gloria, in terms of how we manage mental health in prisons?
From, you know, I read a story of a person who was talking about you know, our recovery programs going in, and he was saying for him, because he was in a gang related place, and he said for him it doesn't work unless you bring the whole family and people into those programs, not just the person that's sitting in jail and whoever the other, you know, the other people around, but because at the end of it, he's got to go back out into that community and be able not to go back through the door. Otherwise, it's just really, they're just going to go in and out of the door, you know. I think, like I found on the thing, it's called the toll on the revolving door.
Right. Well, it's recycling people, really.
It is.
Let's take a music break. Declan, what have you got? What's your choice today?
Well, might help if I turn myself on first. I've got a track here called You Are the Reason by Callum Scott. He's doing quite well for himself, actually. It started out as a song about something completely different than what it ended up being. It was originally written from a fragile place of anxiety and not knowing the cause of it. And it actually started off, it was going to be called Without a Reason. So here's Callum Scott with You Are the Reason, and you're with Mental Health Radio 104.6 Planet FM. Cause you are the reason I'm losing my sleep. Please calm down. There goes my mind racing. And you are the reason that I'm still breathing. I'm hopeless now. I climb every mountain, swim every ocean, just to be with you. Fix what I've broken. Oh, Krishna.
With Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And we're talking today to Gloria White, who is championing the idea and proposal of a mental health court. And I guess one of the things that I should have done early on was to define what a mental health court is. It is a specialist criminal court that deals with mentally ill offenders. The court's primary purpose is to divert mentally ill offenders from the criminal justice system to mental health services. The premise upon which these mental health courts operate is that offending committed by mentally ill persons generally stems from an inability to control or manage their mental health symptoms rather than any form of deliberate criminality. So, you know, their mental health is responsible for whatever crimes they may be charged with. And the whole purpose of a mental health court is to divert these people into the mental health services rather than have them dealt with by criminal courts under the justice system. So is that a fair sort of description, Gloria?
Yeah, that is. I was reading another article, if you don't mind, it's just a quick one that was done and posted in February 2016, and it said people travelling through their journeys of unwellness are being locked up when they shouldn't be. So it themes in what you were saying about our judicial system that we have today is unable, and I say unable, to meet the needs of our whānaus that are travelling in mental health unwellness, and they've really just been locked away.
Well, I mean, it's frightening enough to end up in a mental health hospital where the doors are locked. You know, you've got more facilities in comparison with prison.
Yeah.
And if I just go back to my own experience earlier this year, when I ended up in the Fraser McDonald unit, I mean, the doors are very definitely locked there, and people do not have the freedom. And their freedom is very dependent on the opinions of the staff as to a patient's safety, and also how long they might be allowed out. And some people are not allowed out on their own. So freedom is restricted. I mean, yes, there's a very lovely deck there where you can walk outside, be in the sun, sit at some barbecue tables and look at the trees. And I guess prisoners certainly wouldn't have that privilege. But there is, you know, the more I think about it, there is quite a parallel. And I just can't imagine what it would be like for a seriously mentally ill offender to be convicted and sentenced to prison and end up in solitary confinement virtually. You know, if that's the way we are treating our prisoners with mental health experience, then I think the mental health court can't come fast enough. Yeah, so how are you going to be spreading the word about this mental health court, Gloria? Are you doing a bit of travelling in the next week or so?
Yes, I am. My two sisters and I are going to be travelling down to Dunedin to attend a conference down there, which is called Breaking the Silence, and, you know, having a voice to put forward. They've got a panel there as well. So I just thought, wow, you know, this is another stepping stone to going down and bringing this forward.
Yeah.
Hence why I thought about you and thought, well, that's another place I need to go. Yeah.
Get it out on Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, which is what you're listening to today on Planet FM 104.6. And, of course, we upload this show to the Planet Audio website, and also edit the program so that you can have an edited version of it on www.takeitfromus.co.nz. So who's organising this mental health meeting in Dunedin, Gloria?
They're called Life Matters. It's a suicide organisation, and I think they run there from, I think, the Hawke's Bay or something, and that. Yeah, they're on part of my Facebook, and so when they brought that ad up, I thought, oh, I think this is a good place to go.
Right.
And it's a good site to be on, that Suicide for Life Matters, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And is this all part of the Zero Suicide campaign that's been launched worldwide?
I'm picking too because I'm not too sure. I don't have any facts on it, but I'm picking because there's an inquiry that's going to begin on part of the government. So I'm picking that voices are going to come. You know, there's another part about when the government has a look at these reviews. I believe people with lived experience need to be interviewed.
Well, I was going to mention that review, and actually it's one of the questions that I didn't include in our interview, because I filled out the review online yesterday, and I think it's very important to say that today is the date that where you you know, this is the deadline today.
Yeah.
So I would imagine that you, if you want to fill out and make comment about this review on the mental health and addictions services, that you need to get moving pretty quickly in order to be able to make your contribution. Have you made a contribution in terms of the mental health court, or did you not realise the deadline was today?
I, to be quite honest, I didn't realise the deadline was today, but I know if I get away from here, I'm going to go straight online and do that. It's really important, and I still believe that, you know, when they sit in offices, and I'm sorry, forgive me, but I still believe that they need to have people with lived experience voices sitting on those panels, not just filling out the application forms to lift our voices.
Right.
We need people sitting in that review office.
Well, this radio show is going to be celebrating 25 years of broadcasting, in fact, next week. And I suppose the critical factor with this radio show, Take It From Us, is that we have been able to provide a voice to those people with lived experience. And Gloria is very much an example of that. And I do want to invite our listeners to hear her candid and honest open interview, which we played earlier this year. I think it was in late January, and that will be available on www.takeitfromus.co.nz, because it's an inspiring story of, well, initially abuse, but recovery. And Gloria, you became a recovery educator, didn't you?
Yes, they did.
With the Recovery Innovations, which later became RI International.
That's right. And I also completed a bachelor's degree in 2016. So that was something I didn't think I could do, but I did it. And I thought, wow, you know, recovery is a really good place to be.
Right.
And that, and so, yeah, I just praise the Lord for that one.
Right. And that bachelor's, what were the subjects? Was that in recovery or was it?
Counselling.
In counselling?
Yeah. Yes, I did applied science in counselling. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So will you be pursuing that area of expertise now, or do you want to become a counsellor, or are you going to do other things?
You know, I think I'm going to sort of allow myself to be led where I need to go, and I'll be using the counselling skills and the beautiful strategies that have been taught to me. Mm. But at the moment, I think I've got a journey, and that's to get the mental health court up and running, and that's also to get people's voices up and going around mental health as well.
Yeah. Well, and certainly around the mental health proposal of a mental health court.
Yeah.
Well, let's have another music break, and we'll come back and talk to Gloria about how she intends to bring alive this idea or proposal of a mental health court.
Well, today I've got an up-and-coming new artist. His name's JP Cooper. He looks a bit like a Rastafarian, actually, just looking at his picture now. But anyway, that's beside the point. The voice is great. The song's called Closer. He's 34 years old. He's an English singer and songwriter, and he started in 2012. This particular track was released in 2014, and it features on his 2015 album, When the Darkness Comes. Here is JP Cooper with Closer, live at the church on 104.6 Mental Health Radio, Planet FM.
Don't you know, I wish I was closer. I'll be watching over. And if you're too small to see, I'll lift you on my shoulders. If you're feeling low, I hold you. I wanna be there in the morning, so I'm working through the night. And I'll be smiling into your name while you're rubbing those brown eyes. And if you ever need me, call me. I wanna make sure you're alright. I don't wanna be so far from home. You know your daddy's little soldier and your mother's handsome knight. Now don't you worry about darkness, 'cause you're carrying the light. And no shadows fall when you're around. Don't you know, I wish I was closer. I'll be watching over. And if you're too small to see, I'll lift you on my shoulder.
I want you close to me like songbirds warm the trees. 'Cause when you're close to me, no worries flee from me. 'Cause when I'm with you, my feet don't touch the ground. Now I'm not a king, but when I'm with you, I feel like I'm wearing a crown. And for you I sing, for you I sing, for you I sing. Don't you know, I wish I was closer, I'll be watching. Small to see how that you're on my shoulders. If you feel over my clothes, oh, don't you know? I was closer. I'll be watching over. And if you're too small to see how that you're on my shoulders. I wish I was closer. I'll be watching over.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm Take It From Us host Sheldon Brown with Declan Curran, and we're talking today to Gloria White, former radio guest here on Take It From Us, and a colleague in mental health who has done a lot of recovery education and peer support at RI International, it's now called. Let's just go into a bit more detail about you're going down to do a presentation in Dunedin. So you've got a bit of detail on that as to who's running it and the date and the time, Gloria.
So it's on the 24th. It's down in Dunedin. I've sort of forgotten the venue, but I'm picking. I can get the venue to you.
Right.
And that, and it's at 6 o'clock. So they've got a panel that's going to be present down at this, and so they want people to go in and give their stories and voices on what's happening in mental health.
Yeah. And the organiser of this is Suicide Life Matters.
Yes, that's right.
Right,
that's
so right. I'm sure we could Google Suicide Life Matters, yeah, and pretty good chance that the detail is going to be there. On there about, and that's the day before Anzac Day, and Declan here has expressed some interest in being there. I think he's got a friend in Dunedin, and so his accommodation costs might be reduced. But one of the things with, I guess, stimulating a proposal like this is how do we get some momentum, in the sort of cluttered world of the web and Facebook and that sort of thing? How do you hope to get a bit of momentum going on this?
You know, personally for me, I'm going to read this and that, and it's got "When the world says give up," and that "Hope whispers try it one more time." So I believe using that statement is that I'm not going to give up, but I understand that there's a lot of these, there's funding, there's all sorts out there, but I believe it'll come, and I believe that because I have a passion for it, that I'm going to see it come. And how I do that, I have to start having a look. You know, I may have to have a look at what are the funding, what are the some funding things out there. But again, getting my voice out, and and I started through Facebook, and yep, it's a medium that I've started to use. But also, I've come to you, Sheldon, at Planet Take It From Us. So that's another. And then going down to Dunedin, I hope to do a story there as well.
Right. And do you have other places where you're going to consider presenting? Did I understand that you've got another opportunity somewhere in New Zealand where you can do a presentation after Dunedin or not?
Yeah, I'm actually looking, you know, I'm really looking at approaching organisations like Te Puni Kōkiri and coming from another perspective to find a platform to bring this forward. And again, I believe that just as the AOD court came into existence, that meant the mental health court comes into existence. Because when you look at zero suicide, you know, having a mental health court could actually be maybe one of the gateways that would support people who don't have that support in the judicial system, you know. Right. And so what comes with the mental health court would come services like, you know, our psychiatrists, psychologists, peer support workers, quite a whole host of people to support. I don't know how that financially will sit with the government, but, you know, it's worth putting, investing in people's futures if we're looking at downsizing to zero suicide.
So, I mean, this could well be one way of achieving that zero suicide objective or goal would be to improve prospects of those people with mental health experience who end up in prison.
I was just curious to ask, and I might have missed this along the way, who ultimately makes the decision between a mental health ward or going on to the prison state? Is that joint consultation with police and with mental health staff, or is it something that police have sole jurisdiction over?
I suppose I can give you a little example of that because of what happened with my son at the court. So it was like my son appeared before the judge and that. And so when the judge and the lawyer saw there was some things happening in where my son was sitting in his unwellness, they decided to bring in a forensic mental health person in to assess the situation. So it was from there that they decided that to have a look at how to get my son into a place so that actually they can push away the voices that was happening or whatever they wanted with him. So they sort of had that little joint partnership, but they stepped us out of the square.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they didn't include you in this process, not the family.
No, once the forensic mental health person that was at the court, they decided, okay, you know, that so it was put down that my son attend one of the services up on the coast before 5 o'clock the next day.
Right.
So that was part of a bail condition, and so we honoured that, and it was really quite. It was quite frightening because my son and I attended that just to meet the courts. And then all of a sudden we realised he was being arrested and taken. Yeah, so they'd in that process, they quickly were asking questions, but they wanted questions to catch loop him so that they could section him into a different section because he's under the community treatment order. And that, and they never gave us any warning. It just went, you know, so I can kind of see where you're coming from when, you know, it's, they both sort of had those parallel similarities.
Yeah.
And it is frightening, and it's frightening for the family.
Yeah, I mean, I think to answer Declan's sort of question, there have been cases recently where offenders have pleaded insanity, and if that is proven, then they end up in a forensic institution. And of course, the Mason Clinic is only about 300 metres away from our studio here. So that is one institution where people who are deemed to be insane would end up, and they have limited freedom there. But, you know, this story of your son, I mean, how did this forensic mental health specialist turn up? Did you know they were going to turn up and give an opinion and influence the proceedings?
Well, actually, I was sent a email or a text by the lawyer that was attending, and she said that there would be no one else, just her making a court decision. and around my son going, you know, going forward and that. But within split seconds, I just sat in the court and just watched this person come in, and then they popped us out to the side. And it was amazing. It was like, why are you asking these questions? Because you're not even listening. You're actually, you know, they were driving it towards what the outcome that they wanted. And it was quite alarming, you know, because my son was, again, sitting in a really unwell place and his voices were rampant. But they kept asking him, and they kept asking him if he knew the difference between guilty and not guilty and that. And he said, yes, he does know what guilty is. He said it's when you're not guilty. And so,
sorry,
and that's all
he said,
that he knew what.
If you're guilty, then you're certainly not.
Yeah,
not guilty.
Yeah, because she said, "Do you know what? Do you know what guilty means?" And he says, "Yeah, not guilty." And so that's all the answer he gave. But no one came back and fed back to me. Mm. But they expected me to channel him through the court system and look after him in that process. But there's no support for families that are also sitting in those court procedures as well.
Right.
It's a lonely place to be on your own with no services looking after families as well. So it's quite a big, you know, with the mental health court that I'm looking at, but also how do we look after our families that have to travel with their loved ones?
And, I mean, it's recognised in mental health that isolation is one of the worst things for one's mental health. I mean, how would you have assessed your son's mental health at the time that he was in court? You know, could you give a description of how he was?
Yep. I actually had rung the day before to the services that he that were looking after him up on the coast, and I said to him, "Look, I don't believe my son should be in the court the following day, because I said I have reservations of where he's sitting in his thought and that." And so they just said, "Oh, look, we'll just send a psychologist up and we'll just assess the situation." And so they came up, but they made him wait too long. So he hiked up to the services, and I just looked at them and I just thought, look, my son cannot go to the court at the moment because he's and I was proved right. When we stood in the court, that's what came out. And the frightening place was that I had to look after him outside the court and make sure that everyone else around was okay. But, it's a place that I don't believe anyone should sit. And so that's why I have a heart passion that no matter what happens, I'm going to push to see the road opens for mental health, you know. And I've got a bigger person than me that I'm relying on, and that's my faith.
Right.
That this happens, yeah.
Well, that's a powerful force for good, I would say. Well, let's take another music break. Declan?
Yeah, I just wanted to put in there actually how it sounds like they railroad you into a corner and trap you, because I just picked up on, firstly, when your son said, you know, do you know the difference between guilty and not guilty? And he said, yeah, what guilty is, and he said not guilty. That alone should have rung alarm bells in their head. Because it's, complete opposite. Anyway, just picking up on you saying about your faith there, I have a song here from George Harrison, and it's called My Sweet Lord. Hope you enjoy. They're on 104.6 Planet FM.
You're with Take It From Us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown, and that song reminds me that I'm going to a Buddhist meeting to learn how to do some chanting tonight. So that's going to be a bit of a new experience for me. But today we're talking to Gloria White about a proposal that she's very passionate about to implement a mental health court in New Zealand, very much along the lines of the AOD court, or the Alcohol and Other Drugs court. And I just go back to those statistics that in a report in 2016 prepared by the New Zealand Department of Corrections, they recorded that 91% of prisoners suffer from a lifetime diagnosis called any mental disorder. Do you have any idea, Gloria, what any mental disorder? But it's a bit confusing as to what that means.
I think it's like making a cake without baking powder and,
right.
and putting baking soda in it.
Right. And going on, that 62% have received such a diagnosis within the past 12 months. So we've got a very large proportion of prisoners who are experiencing mental health challenges. And we really, I mean, I have never seen any personal stories that recount prisoners' experiences of how they might be treated, their mental health experience might be treated in prison. And, yeah, and you've got some sort of anecdotal evidence, I think, Gloria, that, you know, you don't get your medication. Probably have to take the initiative, although I'm sure you wouldn't be allowed to take your own pills into the prison anyway. So they'd be taken off you, and whether they are allocated to prisoners under their supervision, I don't know.
Yeah, that's actually a good question, eh? And that, without having any evidence around it, except a snippet that I gleaned from offline around people not getting their medication, you know. So I don't know whether that's because that's a shortage of workers in the system. And I think it's the same through in the mental health system, you know. Before things happen, we heard the voices of people saying, you know, that workers are really overrepresented, that they're stressed and that. And so something needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Because when they're stressed, then it goes down onto the person who's actually trying to get some sort of order in their own lives, you know. And these are the people that are being diagnosed.
So you're saying that mental health workers are very stressed, and that's likely to sort of you know, spin off and spill over into the patients that are there.
That's right, because I saw that when the elections were happening last year, you know, it was on TV, workers were coming forward as to what was happening for them. And I know I have quite a few friends in the mental health who are workers, and they sit in that same place, you know, that that they're overrepresented, there's too much workload.
And they're working shift work as well, which is adds to, you know, if they're starting at midnight and finishing at 6 or 7 in the morning, then their sleep is interrupted. And that was certainly the case in Fraser McDonald Unit, where many of the staff and the nurses were working shift work, and they seemed to be there on a very regular basis. So maybe they were filling in for people who were on holiday or maternity leave or whatever. So they were burning it at both ends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But those personal stories, as I say, is that an avenue that you might go down to try and find people maybe that have returned into the community to talk to them about what it was like having a mental health diagnosis in prison?
Oh, yes, definitely. I know that through my training on the peer training and that, I actually trained people that were actually waiting to go back into jail, and they'd passed their peer support certificate. And that was amazing to see that there was a new lease of life of that they will sit in the jail until they can get out again. Right. That was their hope for them as to how to make changes, you know. But again, it's people who don't have that opportunity of being part of programs to work through what how they can look after their wellness, you know.
Yeah.
I think a personal story for me is my, and I hope you don't mind, is I'll step back with my own son, is that my son is going through the judicial system, and that for the actions that have been created through his mental unwellness. And so my question was, which person are you going to put in the judicial system? You know, the person that is well, and or the person that is unwell. So which one do you do? So they decided that they will medicate my son to get him into a place where they can now bring those charges forward, you know?
What, I'm so not too sure. They're hoping that by the time he reappears in court that he's well enough to answer to the charges. That's surely still ignoring what may have driven him to criminal activity, and that could fairly obviously be his mental health.
Yeah. And very much so, you know. And it's a hard place to be because my son, I hope you don't mind me sharing a little bit, he's okay with it, my family are okay with it, is coming up for assault on one of my two of my family members. One's my brother and one is another person in the family. And, you know, it's a big place. And when you talk to him, and well, when I've spoken to him, I've asked him what was happening, and he's spoken at charges and things from past. His mind has gone back into things that actually have no order in it, and so he believes that that the strike was that he was protecting himself or protecting others, like he brings children and he was protecting the children and all sorts of things. But that was not so from where he was sitting in an unwell space, you know. Yeah. So when he goes back to court, that's why I'm asking, you know, which one is on, you know, which
on
one?
Trial.
Yeah.
Well person or the person.
Yeah.
And he was quite unwell at the time that these assaults occurred.
Yeah, he was very unwell, and he actually called out for help. He went up to, he was in the far north, and he went up to Kai Tai, and he asked them up there that, you know, I don't have any medication, I need some help. And so what they did was he had fill out a form and go and sit down. And so he sat there, and because of where the voices were, he couldn't sit longer than a couple of minutes, and he walked out. And then he rang me and he said, "Mum, I need someone to come and get me. I'm not well, you know. I need my medication." So he was calling out for help and that, but it didn't go to him. I sent a vehicle up to get him, but the vehicle took a little bit longer to get home, and he came back. I had to go and get him. Right. But it was too late by the time I went up to get him.
Yeah. Well, I suppose there's another issue here, of course, that if you're living in the provinces, the access to mental health services is probably, a lot less than if you're living in the city. And, in fact, I got an email today from a friend of mine who's recognised that he needs to leave Auckland and the pressures and that sort of thing. They've sold their house, but he's also saying that he may not have as much access to mental health, good mental health and maybe prompt mental health services as he might do in a provincial town. Your example of your son seeking help, knowing that he's run out of medication, wanting to get that medication, but he was in such a state that he couldn't be patient enough to wait. And, I mean, that's a reality, isn't it? Sometimes we get into such an overwhelmed state that we just can't sit for time to wait for that medication. I know when I had to have medication sent to Kaikoura earlier this year, I was in quite a state to know whether that was going to arrive, because it was very dependent on whether I was going to be able to manage. Yeah, so, well, we've got a little bit more time. I wanted to share an article from the New York Times, which just asks the question, Many people taking antidepressants discover they cannot quit. And now I'd like to share a bit of that on Take It From Us at a later date. But just consider that, yes, antidepressants may be very helpful for our depressive moods. But in my own personal experience, I've found it very difficult to quit them completely. There may only be a bit of placebo effect by me taking small doses of them, but quitting them completely was quite a challenge. So we've got firstly, thanks to Gloria, and she's had her support person here, Don, the husband, and that's that happened last time we did an interview in 2013, and it was absolutely lovely to see Don with the support he's offering. So that's been Take It From Us. Thanks to Gloria and Don. And we'll go out with Joe Cocker.
Absolutely.